Great. And so with that, I am going to turn it over to Alex Scranton, who is our Director of Science and Research and author of this Chem Fatale report, in addition to all of the other fabulous reports that she has authored. So take it away, Alex, and let me know when you want me to move slides.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Cassidy. And welcome to everybody on the call. We love doing these, and it's just great to be able to talk, you know, about our work in more sort of intimate setting, and hopefully we'll have some good conversations based on what we talk about today. So I'm going to do sort of an overview of what the problem is with toxic chemicals in feminine care products, and then I'll go over some of the nitty-gritty details we found in the report, and then we'll talk about some solutions. I'll pass it back to Cass, talk about some solutions. Okay. So the overview, what's the problem that we found? We started, you know, looking at feminine care products and looking at the chemicals that are in them. And what we found is that, unfortunately, with feminine care products, quite a number of them contain these unregulated toxic chemicals that may, in fact, harm women's health. So we found chemicals that were linked to cancer. We found chemicals linked to hormone disruption and particularly concern for reproductive harm. And we found lots of allergens that are, you know, obviously linked to sort of allergic rashes. And the concern about this is it's the chemicals we found are not all that different than the kind of chemicals we found in other cosmetics that we've worked on. But the concern is that you're using these products on a very specific part of your body, right? And it's a part of your body that is extremely sensitive. It's extremely absorptive. So vaginal tissue it's very sensitive. It's more absorptive than skin on the rest of our body. It's covered in mucous membranes. And it means that toxic chemicals, which happen to be very sort of permeable, so there's a greater opportunity for toxic chemicals in these products to get into your body and then potentially affect your health. So we're concerned about the chemicals specifically in this sector of personal care products. All right, next slide, Cassidy. So the other thing we found in our research, looking at some of the demographics of use, is that Black and Latina women tend to use some of the feminine care products in greater numbers than white women. So there's sort of a disproportionate impact on these women of color who are using more of these products. Now, tampons and pads are used kind of universally by women of different races and ethnicities, but it's things like douche and some of the sprays and feminine wipes that are used in particularly in higher frequency among Black women, and then also some of these products at higher frequency among Latina women. So we're really concerned about this impact to women of color who are already impacted in lots of other ways by toxic chemicals. And then the last sort of piece to all of this is that no one really likes talking about feminine care, right? No one talks about these products or their use of these products. And it's not something you talk about in polite conversation, although we're going to do it here today, and I've been, you know, doing it for the last several months, it seems like. And as a result, because it's kind of a taboo subject, we don't think these products are getting either the attention or the scrutiny or the oversight that they really need to assure their safety for women's health. So we're concerned that we think it's time to sort of have these conversations out in the open and really take a look at what's going on with these products. And see if we can and make them, in fact, safer for women to use. Okay, so next slide. What did we find in this report? And I'll go through a number of different products and get some examples of the things we found. So tampons and pads, these are certainly used by the greatest majority of women across the board. We found some independent laboratory tests, studies that found dioxins and furans and pesticide residues in tampons. Dioxins and furans, very, very toxic chemicals linked to cancer and reproductive harm and endocrine disruption. These are contaminants that come from when the cotton in the tampons is bleached with a chlorine process. So contamination as a result of that leaves these chemicals in the product. Pesticide residues, same thing. Cotton, when it's traditionally grown, needs a lot of pesticides to make it grow, and these pesticide residues are ending up in the tampons. Now, these levels are very low that were found, but we're really concerned about, sort of long-term, hours at a time, sensitive exposure to vaginal tissue that comes from tampons, and we think, we need a greater look at whether or not we can do better quality control to make sure that these chemicals are, in fact, not in the tampons that we use. Menstrual pads, there have been a couple studies on those, particularly looking at vulvar and anal genital dermatitis in some women. Women who are realizing they're getting a rash only around the time of their period, and then it's realizing it's actually associated with the, you know, the contact with the menstrual pad. There turns out there are a number of different allergens that you can find in these pads. Certainly scented pads contain fragrances. Lots of different skin allergens can be present in fragrance. And there was also a particular adhesive chemical called methyl dibromoglutarone nitrile, probably pronouncing that wrong, which was also seen as an allergen trigger in a particular case. The problem with tampons and pads is that they're regulation by the Food and Drug Administration, by the FDA. They're actually technically medical devices. They're not cosmetics. And because they're medical devices, there's no requirement to disclose any of their ingredients in these products. So if you want to find out what's in the product that you use, you basically have to take it, you know, to an independent lab and get it analyzed, which, of course, no one can do. So we really, you know, think that's it's a major problem in terms of we're using these products, and tampons particularly used internally in our bodies, and we don't know, and we're not being told by the companies what is being used in these products. So that's a problem. Okay, next slide. Feminine wax. Feminine wax is a kind of a newly taken off category. They've been around for a long time, but everything seems to come in sort of wax formats these days. And there are lots more brands, and there seems to be a lot greater increase in use of these sort of very convenient white products. Now, feminine wipes, because they're moist, you know, in the package, they have to contain some sort of preservative, you know, technology to prevent bacteria from growing. Just like some kind of moist cloth and, you know, sealed in the package, it's going to grow bacteria. So you need something to protect you from that bacteria growth. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the preservatives that get used to protect these wipes from bacteria growth may in fact be harmful and kind of inappropriate for a feminine care product. Two examples, quaternium 15 and DM hydantoin. These two chemicals are what we call formaldehyde releasers. So the way they kill bacteria or prevent bacteria from growing is they actually release formaldehyde into the solution. Now, formaldehyde is a known human carcinogen. And so we should really sort of question, you know, how good an idea it is to have formaldehyde directly on these very sensitive tissues. Again, it's a small amount, but there's been virtually no research on what the impact is of applying formaldehyde to vaginal tissue, and we're certainly concerned about it and think that it needs, you know, to be looked at. Parabens are also very frequently common preservatives that are found in wipes, and they are potential endocrine disruptors. So we're concerned about kind of the reproductive effects that may be happening. And then the last two, again, I'm probably going to butcher these because they're so hard to pronounce, methylchloroisothiazolinone, and its sort of counterpart. These are two chemicals that were actually named in 2013 as Allergen of the Year by the American Contact Dermatitis Society because it's they're in so many products, and they're realizing more and more how frequently these are causing skin allergies, particularly. Again, all of the chemicals that I've listed have been tagged as trigger allergens as well, particularly for anogenital dermatitis. So, you know, these are chemicals that are used in these products that are used specifically on this area of your body that we know are potentially causing these sort of dermatitis rash conditions. So again, maybe they should, you know, maybe need a better, some better preservatives for these products that are more appropriate. Okay, next one. Feminine wash. Feminine wash is one of these products that is, you know, it's kind of a marketing thing to some degree. It's not all that different from kind of other body washes that you see as far as what's in there. One of the things we did find in several feminine washes, though, are these particular dyes. You know, why these products are dyed in the first place, I'm not sure. As you can see, they're mostly opaque packaging. So it's not even like you can tell the dye until you've opened the package. But they include dyes like red number 33 and violet number 2. These two dyes particularly are not FDA approved for contact with mucous membranes, which seems to be a real conflict if it's in something that's a feminine wash. Now, what you'll find, because I think the sort of legal way out, is that these labels of feminine wash will say for external use only. And while it does, you know, distinguish it from an internal, specifically internal wash, like a douche, it doesn't actually prevent the very likely contact with vaginal tissue that will come from just regular feminine wash use. I mean, you know, the way the female anatomy is, there are mucous membranes that are external. These tissues are all connected. And so it's very hard to kind of draw that line between external and internal with a product. And so we don't think that these chemicals that are, you know, not appropriate for contacting these mucous membranes can be in feminine care products. And assure the safety of those chemicals. All right, next one. The next one is feminine deodorants, and these are come in a range of different formats, from sprays, powders, and there are some feminine deodorant suppositories as well. One of the chemicals we found in these products that was of concern is a chemical called benzethonium chloride. It's also a preservative, and it's kind of a disinfectant chemical. In other countries, you can't use this chemical in products like feminine deodorants. Canada, in Japan, in Europe, it is restricted from use in products that are used on mucous membranes. It's often restricted in products that are leave-on products as opposed to wash-off products, and all these feminine, you know, deodorants are ones that you leave on your body. Yet in the U.S., we don't have those restrictions, so they can be used in these products. The study that was done in Europe sort of banned, you know, these things from leave-on products because of concerns about reproductive harm and what the exposures are there. And benzethonium chloride is also a potent spermicide. It's used in various kind of foam contraceptive products. So we're also concerned about people using a spermicide maybe not realizing that that is in there. They're having sort of inadvertent contraceptive qualities that's not useful for women's health either. Okay, next one. Okay, this is my last slide on this. Feminine anti-itch creams, and this one sort of really made me crazy the more I looked into it. Now, feminine anti-itch creams, this is, you know, goes back to this issue of women don't want to talk about these issues, and sometimes they don't even want to talk to their doctors about the conditions that they have. So feminine anti-itch creams, they're over-the-counter drugs. They're commonly used by women to kind of self-treat itch symptoms that they may be having, which could be due to a number of different things. Unfortunately, what we're finding is that in these, you know, creams that are meant to you know, combat itch, they routinely include allergens that have specifically been noted as these common causes of anogenital dermatitis. So things like benzocaine is commonly in there. Parabens are often used as, and methyl isothiazolam are used as preservatives in these products. So you could have women using these products in order to combat itch, and they could in fact be making the itch worse because there are allergens in there, and that people don't realize. And because these anti-itch creams are regulated as over-the-counter drugs, they get a little bit more focus and attention from the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, but the review is really pretty much solely on the active ingredients, the things that are, you know, kind of numbing your skin from the itch, not on the inactive ingredients, which may in fact be causing the itch. So I think that really needs, you know, to be looked at more carefully because, especially because these things are often getting used without, you know, sort of a doctor's diagnosis or even medical advice. In general. So what we're talking about with all these products is that, you know, this is not, you know, you sort of look at this thing and you're like, how could they possibly be using these chemicals? This isn't really about companies intentionally trying to hurt anyone. And these chemicals really aren't all that unusual or different from those used in other cosmetics. It's just that we don't think there's, you know, quite enough kind of thoughtfulness and thoroughness in choosing which chemicals are going to be appropriate for this part of your body, given, you know, the contact that it can have. You know, these are all kind of legal products, but our laws are just not good enough to assure our safety, which is why we don't think people have been asking kind of the right questions, really, as to what would be appropriate to use in these products. On this very sensitive part of our body. So I think I'll turn it over to Cass. That's kind of the gist of a lot of what's in our report. I'll turn it over to Cass to talk about some of the solutions.
Thanks, Alex. Do you know what I just realized? And I don't know if you did this intentionally, but we didn't talk about douche at all.
Oh, you're right.
I don't know if you want to just say a couple words about that.
Sure, sure. It's true. Yeah, I was like, maybe I just left out that. So Jewish, there's probably the most research out there that's on Deutsch in terms of what the various effects are, and they have been able to link use of Deutsch to a number of different vaginal infections and pelvic inflammatory disease, and a number of other reproductive conditions. There hasn't been that much research looking at, you know, which chemicals might be doing that. Some of it just might happen to be kind of the internal washing mechanism that's a problem. But one of the chemicals that we found, which is of concern, is octooxanol 9. It's frequently found in douches, and I'm not even sure why it's in there and what sort of, you know, purpose it has. It's actually also a very potent spermicide. So it's like kind of one of these, and it's been associated with, you know, genital irritation. So, you know, why are you, you know, using a chemical that can have those effects, in a douche product, which, you know, you're hoping will not have those effects. So that's, I guess, sort of a little story on douche. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, on the spot there.
Yeah, that's okay.
All right, so you all are probably wondering, well, wait, where are all these tips for how to detox then? We just found out what all of this scary stuff is in here. Now what do we do? As Alex said, there are there's kind of a couple ways to go about this. There is sort of this problem right now, right, that a lot of manufacturers aren't listing many ingredients in their products. And so sometimes it can be hard to actually avoid certain chemicals of concern, particularly when we're talking about pads and tampons. We're not going to find, in a lot of mainstream products, we're not going to find the ingredients on there. So what can you do? So this first tip, reducing your use of feminine care products, is a really, really good tip. Are there, you know, some feminine care products that you might be using right now that aren't necessary to a healthy vagina? Say wipes, say douche or feminine wash. Can you reduce your use of those if possible? And that will reduce your exposure to toxic chemicals in those products. This one, the choose fragrance-free, is a really, really good tip because that is something that we can control when it comes to pads and tampons in particular. We can't necessarily control what else might be in those pads and tampons, but at least we will see on a label if a pad or a tampon is fragrance-free. And automatically, with that, you've reduced your exposure to an unknown amount of fragrance chemicals, right? Because, again, companies don't have to list fragrance ingredients. And as Alex mentioned, in fragrance can be anywhere up to, and, you know, I've heard from different experts, and Alex can maybe chime in on this, anywhere from up to 100 to up to 300 individual ingredients in one fragrance. Alex, do you know if 300 seems right?
Yeah, no, I've heard that number too. I mean, you know, sometimes it's, you know, as low as 5 or 12 or something, and but it can be up to, you know, up to 300.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason that we know that there are some scary chemicals in fragrance that Alex mentioned a little bit, too, is that when the International Fragrance Association released their list of over 3,000 chemicals that are commonly used in fragrance, on that list are chemicals that are linked to cancer, to reproductive harm, to genetic mutation, to hormone disruption, to allergies. And so we think it's absolutely ridiculous that companies don't have to tell you which ones of those they're using when we know there are some really scary ones. And so going for fragrance-free, and this is honestly, this is always my biggest tip for everybody, no matter what product we're talking about, going fragrance-free kind of across the board or where you can is a really great way to reduce your exposure. And again, particularly with pads and tampons. And of course, choosing chlorine-free bleached or completely just unbleached cotton tampons and pads is going to reduce your exposure quite a bit, particularly, you know, when we're talking about tampons, which will be inside of you for quite a long time, and it extends your exposure rate, like Alex mentioned. Here's the thing. We know that it is just more expensive to go for those brands, right? The Seventh Generations, the Nature Cares, those are just more expensive. And so we know that this is not the best solution at the moment, right? It shouldn't be our responsibility to have to pay more to have a tampon that's safe. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's unfortunate right now that this is kind of the solution that we can offer. And so down here, though, we have a couple of companies that have committed to make safer products. And I just want to say that, you know, Women's Voices for the Earth has not had the time to take a look at what are the ingredients in these products, what are the screening processes of these companies. But these are companies that have come forward and said, we are committed to making products without toxic chemicals in them. And so this is just a list of the ones that I know of, and there may be many more out there, and if people do know of some others that they think should be added to this list, please let us know, because we'll actually be putting together sort of a more formal list next year, hopefully. But for now, these are just some ideas. And Alex, I don't know if you want to briefly mention the concern with the cups, the menstrual cups, or if we want to just kind of leave that out.
Sure, I can, because people have asked us this quite a bit about, and we didn't mention menstrual cups in the report specifically. And there is one kind of researcher who's been petitioning the Food and Drug Administration because of a concern that using a menstrual cup, which is kind of these reusable, it's like the Diva cup or the, what's the other one? Like, yeah, I guess the Lunette cup, I think. It's a reusable cup that collects menstrual blood when you empty it and put it back inside, that it could lead to potential risk for endometriosis. There isn't any clinical data on it, and there's, you know, it's kind of a theory at this point, but we didn't know, you know, we don't have enough information to either sort of confirm the theory or condemn the theory, so we kind of left it out for right now. We've heard certainly plenty of people using this successfully and enjoying it, and there aren't any studies showing, you know, greater rates of endometriosis from use of these products, but, you know, they're not also widely used, so we don't have data on it. So that's where we are on the menstrual cup at the moment.
Perfect. And we know that they're made of silicone, right? Although we haven't seen any to know.
Right.
So hopefully, you know, that'll be our next campaign step. We can test some of these products and let you know exactly what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Another sort of easy thing to do if, you are a user of feminine care products in addition to pads and tampons or other than pads and tampons is take a look at our Hall of Shame that we put together. And this, you know, all we did on this one was read labels and pick out some of the most egregious products out there. And so you'll see, if you go to our website, you will see this. You'll be actually be able to see this graphic clearly so that you can actually pull it up and look at it. But you will see that the chemicals of concern are highlighted in red. And so if your favorite product is on this list and a lot of the ingredients are highlighted in red, you might want to consider using a different product. And I just am going to call out a couple of them on this list in case some of you guys aren't connected to the internet, but under wipes, some egregious ones are Walgreens Feminine Wipes, Vagisil Anti-Itch Wipes, Kirkland Signature Moist Flushable Wipes. Under Feminine Wash, CVS Feminine Wash, Equate, Intimor, Lemisol, which is one that is not too popular, hadn't heard of before. Summer's Eve, which is a huge brand, will be on most of the shelves. Summer's Eve Feminine Wash. Vagisil, again, making Feminine Wash that's pretty toxic. And under douche, again, a Summer's Eve, a Messengil, that's another well-known brand, CVS, again, a retailer brand, and under feminine deodorants, we've got Tropical Splash, another Summer's Eve, another Vagisil, and under anti-itch, of course, a Vagisil, a VH. So take a look at those, particularly take a look at those two anti-itch creams, especially because I know that we all probably use those from time to time, so take a look at those. And you are welcome to download that fact sheet as well and print it out. And then the other thing you can do is also on our website, right next to the same page, you'll see it, is print out and take with you this list of chemicals of concern that Alex put together. And take it with you, keep it in your purse when you're shopping. And if you see some of these chemicals, I mean, you know, those allergens may not be listed, the parabens may not be listed because they're fragrance ingredients. Although, you know, they might be, right, Alex, because they're also preservatives.
Yeah, they're also preservatives, yeah, so they can be listed, yeah.
Yeah, the DMDM hydantoin, the quaternium 15, those are easy ones to see on a label for sure. They tend to stand out. You know, these dyes are a little bit harder, I think, to kind of sort through, but to have that list handy is really helpful and kind of helps you be a more vigilant shopper. Again, this is not the best solution because it puts the burden on us, right? And we should not have to have PhDs to go shopping. We shouldn't have to have long lists in our wallets to pull out and say, gosh, is this toxic chemical in this product? Products should just be safe to begin with. particularly when we're talking about more expensive products being the safer ones. All products should be safe to begin with, and all women should have access to safe products no matter how much money we make, right? So then, how do we make this systemic change so that we're actually convincing the entire industry to make safe, affordable products? So the first thing we're doing is, you can see this right on our homepage at womensvoices.org. We're asking Procter & Gamble, which is the largest consumer product company on the planet, to disclose the ingredients and remove toxic chemicals from Tampax tampons and Always pads. Those are the two feminine care products that Procter & Gamble makes, and they're really big sellers on the shelves. If we can get somebody like a Procter & Gamble to move on this, the entire industry will sort of follow like dominoes, and this is what we've seen in other industries, like the cleaning product industry. Nobody was listing ingredients 5 years ago, and now everybody is listing at least some ingredients and are starting to list fragrance ingredients. So this is huge. So please take action on our homepage, even if you don't use those ingredients, those feminine care products, if you don't use Tampax, if you don't use Always. Tell Procter & Gamble that they better start listing ingredients, because all of the women who don't even know about this, because it's not their responsibility to know about it, deserve safer products. So second, you can call the, so most, all products should be shocking if they don't have a customer service number on your favorite product, and tell them that you've read this report, you listened to this webinar, you learned all about this, and you're concerned about the ingredients in their products, and you want to know what's in there, because you have a right to know what's in there, especially when we're talking about the most intimate parts of our bodies that are really absorptive. I just did this actually with Diva Curl. It's my favorite conditioner. I think maybe some of you on the phone have heard about it, and they market themselves as safe and, paraben-free and phthalate-free. And I think I just found out they have DMDM hydantoin in it, which is one of the chemicals of concern that we called out, which is crazy. So I called them and said, take it out. You also, if you want to go a step further, can call the FDA, which regulates personal care products, like feminine care products, and tell them, have you had a reaction to a feminine care product? And then they can add it to their data, which is helpful in actually getting something regulated. Oh, Charnel, thanks for the heads up that that link doesn't work. If you go to womensvoices.org, and there's a slide, it's the second slide on our homepage, and it says Chem Fatale, or if you just type Chem Fatale into the search bar, it's also under issues. You can find it from a lot of different ways, but it's definitely, you can see it there on our homepage too. Thanks for that heads up. I'm going to pass this back over to Alex.
Sure. And just to tag on to what you were saying about, calling companies and calling the FDA, it really does make a difference. I mean, that they really want to hear from their customers, and they really care what their customers have to say. And then particularly, I think, with feminine care products, I don't think they get a lot of calls. Again, people don't like to talk about this. If someone's had a reaction, they tend to keep it themselves and just switch products or, take care of themselves. But speaking out and letting the companies know that this is really important and they should be paying attention to this makes a big difference in terms of the internal conversations that are happening at these companies and the internal conversations that are happening at the Food and Drug Administration on what oversight they need to do. So very, very important ways to use your voice. Policy, we certainly would love to have lots of policy options, and we hope, to have more in the future. Right now, the best option that's kind of on the table is something called the Safe Cosmetics and Personal Care Products Act. And this is something we've been working on for those feminine care products that are regulated as cosmetics. It would affect them. What this bill would do, because, we've got some regulations on chemicals that you can use in products. They're fairly weak, particularly for cosmetics. The Food and Drug Administration does not do a lot of oversight. For the most part, the cosmetics industry kind of polices itself. And this is a problem because there's obviously inherent, conflicts of interest there. So what this bill would do, it would require safety testing of ingredients. It would require the phase-out of ingredients that are linked to cancer, birth defects, and developmental harm. They would not be allowed to be used in cosmetics and personal care products. There would be required disclosure of fragrance ingredients, which is really important, particularly for avoiding allergies and some of the other associations with various fragrance chemicals. And it would really give the Food and Drug Administration greater authority and greater resources to oversee cosmetic product safety. Right now, they just simply don't have the capacity to handle everything that needs to be done. So this bill would actually authorize more resources for them. and give them greater authority to work on these companies. So one thing you can do, I mean, the bill right now, it has been introduced in the House. If you call your congressional House representative, you know, you want to ask them to co-sponsor this bill. It's, you know, the moment it's in a little bit of a holding pattern. We're from, you know, waiting to see what will happen with Congress. But the more co-sponsors it has, the more representatives I hear from their constituents that this is an issue of importance, the more likely that this bill will move. So please, if you're interested in kind of the policy angle, that's a really good way to help move things forward.
Great. Yeah, and we actually have that. You can easily email your senators from our website under Safe Cosmetics. You can find that link. And so the reason that we want to highlight these corporate ways to raise your voice, these policy ways, is because in addition to giving you the tools right now that you need to reduce your exposure on your own, is that women have a massive, massive amount of power to make systemic change in this area. So women consistently rate the toxic chemical pollution in the environment as one of our top concerns, which makes us a really powerful voice for changing that and making products safer. When it comes to economic power, women make almost 85% of purchasing decisions in the average home. That is a massive, massive amount of economic power, and we are seeing that in play just over the last few months. I'm talking about companies falling like dominoes because women, specifically women, have been raising their voices for safer products and voting with their dollars in addition to, you know, taking actions online, in addition to speaking up in the media. We have seen Walmart introduced a new sustainability policy where they're completely banning a list of 10 toxic chemicals from their shelves. We've seen Procter & Gamble remove a cancer-causing chemical from Tide and Tide Free and Gentle and saying that they are removing triclosan and phthalates from all of their products worldwide. We've seen Target introduce the sustainability policy right on the heels of Walmart. And so when you raise your voice, companies listen. And when we are talking about feminine care products, we are 100% of their market, right? And to be honest with you, all of these companies, all of them, the big ones, are led by men. And, you know, to let you in on some of our insider strategy at Women's Voices, we honestly think the more that we email them emails with the word vagina in it, the faster they will listen because they don't want to hear that. So definitely email Procter & Gamble and tell your friends. Women also have a massive amount of social power, huge amount of social power. So please tell your friends about this. And on the political side, women also have a huge amount of political power. More women vote in this country today than men do, and women vote more often in more elections than men do. And we have seen this just in Montana with our Senator Baucus, who was on the head of the committee that the Safe Chemicals Act, the Federal Safe Chemicals Act, had to pass through his committee to get to the Senate floor. And because we mobilized women in Montana to say, hey, you need to support this bill and protect our families, he supported it. And so it is so important. You might think that one click doesn't matter, one email doesn't matter, one phone call doesn't matter, but it does. It absolutely does. You have so much power. And, of course, here are some other ways that you can get involved. You all probably are already signed up for Women's Voices. You can give to our work. We do so much on a tiny, tiny little budget. Our budget is less than $500,000. And we are convincing, we were the ones who convinced Procter & Gamble with our $500,000 budget, with all of the women who are standing behind us, the biggest consumer product company on the planet with a multi-billion-dollar budget, to remove a cancer-causing chemical from their top-selling detergent. So when you give us $5, imagine what we can do with that $5. You give us $50, holy moly, we can go big. So definitely donate to our work. And definitely follow us on social media. Social media is just incredibly fast-growing form of activism. Huge, huge outlets for activism. Again, you think that sharing something on social media maybe doesn't matter that much? It's huge. The fact that our SC Johnson spoof video has had 11,000 views, that's not really that many in this sort of viral atmosphere that we're living in, but you can bet that they are paying attention for sure. So please follow us on social media, interact with us, share things. Gosh, and I feel like I'm out of breath because I was getting so excited about all this. So why don't we, right now, I'm going to unmute all of your lines and open this up for questions for Alex or if you happen to have any for me, and to just sort of have a conversation about this topic that is kind of actually hard to talk about. So thank you all for
the conference has been unmuted.
So does anybody have any questions for Alex?
I have a question.
Yeah, who's that?
This is Kathy.
Hey, go ahead.
In regards to the tampons, if you remove some of those chemicals, I'm not sure what the relationship would be with, like, the toxic shock syndrome. How can you ensure they're sterile or clean enough to use so you don't get any other problems?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. We didn't directly address toxic shock syndrome in the report. And it's not necessarily linked to chemicals in the tampons, but I think it has to do more with the potential for various kinds of bacteria growth, you know, in there, and then having that effect. So we don't know whether or not having, you know, better quality control and making sure that the dioxins and serums and pesticide residues aren't in the tampons, whether or not that would improve, you know, the chances of toxic shock. That research hasn't been done, and I'm not sure what the impact would be. There certainly is that concern. It's, you know, it's kind of one of those things people have asked for, like, oh, well, you know, should we not be using tampons then? And there's certainly a lot of people who are kind of on that, of that belief. And, you know, I don't know that we have enough. We sort of feel it's such a personal choice in terms of, to deal with menstrual hygiene that, you know, we're not making a recommendation one way or the other. But we don't know how much the toxic chemicals may or may not be contributing to toxic shock. But it's certainly a question that is worth research.
Maybe they could just sterilize them somehow, and then that would, you know, like you do with things in the hospital, just sterilize them somehow, and then that would be less chance of problems.
Right.
I'd like to add something. I think it might be that they came out with products that lasted longer, and people were leaving them in there longer. That's what I remember about that. So
right.
We might have advice for people to change quickly. Yeah. You know,
right.
not have a good throughput.
Yeah, I think that was the initial problem with kind of these the sleeper tampons. Yeah.
Yeah, education is always good too. People, you know, you have to get the word out there. Don't keep it in all day.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Refresh them.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. I have a question too. A friend of mine is using one of those cups, and I hadn't heard of the potential risk. Is it that people aren't sanitizing them well in between?
The theory, it has nothing to do with the sanitization or the reuse. The concern is that because it collects the menstrual blood, whether or not it may have to do with, you know, how long you keep it in, whether or not the blood that's there, which is, you know, shedding endometrial tissue, could then kind of backflow into the uterus and then potentially increase their endometriosis that way. I understand, some backflow does happen naturally, you know, anyway, and obviously not everyone has endometriosis from that. So that's kind of the theory as I understand it. And again, it is just a theory at this point. But I haven't heard of any concerns about the you know, sanitization issue.
Okay,
I mentioned that, you know, the companies that make them, you know, provide instructions on how to do that. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I say something about the backflow?
Yeah.
I'm Carol. I'm Carol from the Keeper, Inc. We manufacture the Keeper menstrual cup.
Oh, great. Great. Oh, great.
And the issue was, we've been on the market going on 27 years. We were the first to successfully bring a menstrual cup to market, and there are now others that have copied and that are on the market in this country and in a couple other countries. The issue was with the endometriosis was about 10 to 15 years ago that came up, and then there was some research done, and they couldn't come up with any good results, so the issue went away. And it was more concerned, you were right, about the backflow, but it would be when you're sleeping, if you're in a laying down position. So if you're concerned, you know, it's always, that's always on the side of caution. You can always use a pad when you're sleeping, or, you know, don't use your cup if you're concerned. Mm-hmm. But there hasn't been any scientific anything solid about it.
No, exactly. You know, we sort of, you know, I dug into it and I kind of heard about this concern. I was like, oh, what do I need to know? You know, and
be, you know, if you're laying down in bed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
This is Sarita with the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, and I had a question or concern, I suppose, about just the falling age of puberty and how, you know, girls are using these products at younger and younger ages now, which isn't reflected in the marketing. It's not reflected in the branding or anything. You know, we still have this assumption that it's, you know, teenage girls and women using the products when, in fact, it's girls as young as 8. So my question, I guess, is, like, what do we know? Do we know anything about the connections between these chemicals of concern and the falling age of puberty? And then vice versa, with girls experiencing puberty younger, they're, you know, being exposed much longer periods of their life to these chemicals.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really, really good question. And there, you know, of course, it's one of these topics where, you know, there's so little research, you know, and I certainly haven't seen any studies looking at, you know, effects of feminine care product use and, you know, related to falling age of puberty, honestly, you know, generally doesn't happen until afterwards. There has been some marketing of tampons and pads, like, towards tweens, which is, you know, because they realize that the market is going there, and there's definitely a concern about these younger girls and what their, you know, those early exposures are. There's very little data anyway in terms of, you know, the other kinds of products, the douche and the sprays and those sort of things as to, you know, when they start getting used. For what we understand, a lot of it, you know, girls are getting taught to use these products by their moms. You know, there's kind of a history. If your mom uses it, you're more likely to use it as well. Whether or not that, you know, starts as soon as they get their period or not, I don't know. Or whether it's, you know, happens more frequently, it's more, you know, sexual maturation and things like that. I don't know. But it's, you know, it's certainly a valid question because the falling age of puberty is a concern, and, you know, increasing the exposure of over a lifetime to these chemicals is a concern for sure.
I just want to thank you guys for putting out this report and doing all of this awareness building, because you're absolutely right. It's an issue we need to be talking more about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks. Good. Yeah. And we've had great response to it. We really appreciate it, you know, that folks are willing to talk about it and, you know, feeling it's important. So.
May I ask a question regarding wipes?
Yes.
Are you guys aware of any wipes, not necessarily feminine wipes, but I don't use them for feminine purposes. I use them for other purposes, the other side.
sure.
And but now that I know this, I probably won't anymore. Do you know of any safe or have any suggestions for that? I just feel cleaner when I do that.
Sure. Yeah. It's certainly a product that people are using more and more often. So we're thinking about it. You know, I don't have brands to recommend to you, and that's certainly open enough to the group if anyone knows. But I would look through the chemicals of concern list that we put in there, because it is most likely the preservatives that are of concern, and particularly the ones that are, you know, linked to things like anogenital dermatitis. So that's, you know, that can be both sides and potentially rash causing, and it can cause irritation and that kind of thing. So I would look through those lists of chemicals to see if you can find products that don't have those, which is, you know, a long, you know, unfortunately, you know, arduous process to figure it out. But I can, you know, we can certainly open it up to the group if anyone else knows of products that they think are better.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Barbara.
Hi, I have a couple questions. So what's the next step, and how can we join forces with your organization to get the word out on the toxic chemicals in feminine care products, since it is kind of a hush-hush field. What can we do besides making donations and writing to companies and such? How do we tell other women in a way that to help them understand?
That is a good question. You know, I feel like the first thing would be to send them to our website so that they see that this is backed by science. I think that when you're introducing a topic like this, or honestly, when you're introducing a topic of toxic chemicals that can harm our health and products that we use every day, no matter what the product, you know, it's hard to believe. And so I would say the first step would be to say, hey, why don't you go check out this website? And at this point, we are really working on escalating this campaign, and so we will have a lot more options in the new year of ways to get involved and things to do. We want to do, you know, some video series. We want to do more webinars. We want to join forces with other bigger organizations and, you know, make some big splashes with some of these big corporations. But I think right now the best thing to do is to email Procter & Gamble, to share it on social media if you haven't yet. If you are a blogger, if you have a blog, to write about it. So I think the first step right now is really just getting the word out, and then in 2014 we'll have a lot more options. Alex, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I think especially with products like this, you know, speaking with your sort of, you know, individual sphere of influence, like the people around you who trust you and who are your sort of confidants, you know, have these conversations with them and talk to them about your concerns. Because those are the most important and most influential voices, you know, so the people that you're closest to. And if your friends are concerned, then they're, you know, if you're concerned, your friends are going to be concerned. So getting it out, you know, that way is really a very, very, very important way to get the word out.
Well, thank you, and I'll definitely send people to your website and help get the word out on my end, too.
Great, thanks. We will definitely keep you in the loop.
Yeah.
Going on. Elizabeth, I see you've had your hand raised. Have you had a chance to ask a question?
No, actually, Carol's on. She answered, was the keeper.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. And then another point I'd like to make for everybody is these toxins that are in these products. You got to also remember, these also go into our environment with the disposables. So every toxin you talk about also goes back into the earth.
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
Yeah.
Yep. And the glues, like on the back of pans, that glue is very toxic to the earth. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other things. You know, when you're working on this campaign, which you're doing a phenomenal job, you're also helping the environment by reducing some of these chemicals and toxins that are in these products. And that affects everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when you're talking about toxic shock, also men are known to get toxic shock also. It's not just a women's issue.
Huh.
Yeah, I think that's
a drop off.
You know.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess we do just have about 5 minutes left. Does anybody have any parting comments or questions that we didn't get to yet?
This is Sarah. I'm curious if there's any possibility or avenue to kind of get into the health classes when girls are first taught about the change. And kind of getting some of these educational materials into that education.
Oh, it's a totally great idea, and yeah, absolutely needs to be done. And I think we're, you know, hoping to sort of, you know, build these relationships with groups that do that, and also get this information just even into the hands of medical care providers, you know, mm-hmm. who are, because I think a lot of women don't talk to their medical providers about this, but if we had them, you know, specifically asking questions about the kind of products they use and generating that conversation, that's another really useful place for these, you know, for these conversations to happen. But yeah, kind of those health classes and that sort of training that happens particularly with young women is very, very important. Yeah. If you have ideas, let us know.
Yeah.
This is Anya, just a parting comment. I really want to thank you guys for talking about this. I mean, there aren't really good alternatives out there right now, so there's the systemic change required, because face it, some of us just bleed much, much more than the others. And these, you know, the NatraCare pads, they're really not good unless you're sitting at home and willing to change it every 1 hour. So, you know, really thank you for putting in all this effort. We really need to see a wider chain so that everybody can access this, not just us sitting in this tiny little bubble where we can access all these things.
Right, exactly. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. That is certainly the goal, to make it safer for everybody.
All right, great. Well, we will say thank you so much to all of you for being on and for sharing your thoughts and asking questions, and we will keep this campaign going. It's only going to gain momentum, and please feel free to email Alex or I if you have questions that didn't get answered, or give us a call. I love talking to people on the phone. It's the best part of my job, so always feel free to give us a call. And thank you so much, and good night.
Yes. Thanks, Cass.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you. Please stand by.